panic raised up from under my hood.
Well, good morning, everybody. Good morning, good morning. We've had some technical difficulties, and it's all my fault, but we're on the air, and we're going to talk about cars for the next hour and, 40 minutes. And so I apologize for not being here when you expect me here at the very beginning of the show, but it's just sometimes things happen. I guess things happen is the right word. Would you say that things happen?
That is correct.
Yes, things happen. It's better than saying what I really want to say. And it's Andy, my daughter, sitting here next to me, and the phone lines are open, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The reason why in 1988 I put together the best car repair shops in Phoenix is because no other list existed. And I needed to identify the guys that are really the leaders in our industry. And I also wanted to make sure that folks understood clearly that there are good shops in the car repair industry. There are good shops. There are places you can go. So one of the very first people was Quality Transmission in Tempe. Quality's there because they deserve to be there. Quality's been in business since 1977, and Bob and Steve are very good at what they do, and they take good care of their customers, my customers, and everybody else's customers, and they know how to fix transmission. It's the only transmission shop in the East Valley that I think is worth an endorsement. They are really, really good at what they do. That's Quality Transmission, serving the East Valley since 77, and they're on McClintock, just north of University in Tempe. Let's go to Bob. Bob, good morning to you. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning, Mark. Same to you. I have a 2001 DeVille base model, and I have an air ejection pump that's bad, which is the driver's side. Can I jack just the front of the car up and leave it on stands to change that out?
Can you leave it on stands?
I'm saying if I jack the front end up and have it on jack stands, can I do that repair, changeover, with the front end of the car jacked up?
I would imagine so. I think it's much easier to get to that air pump from the bottom than it is the top. You might have an engine pan that you're going to have to take off. And don't forget that on the early model DeVilles, we had to move stuff to gain access to different stuff. So it's not unlike that you might have to pull the fan shroud off of it or fold the fan shroud towards the motor, disconnect it from the radiator, fold it towards the motor or something like that to gain clearer access. But yes, I would imagine you can get the air pump from the bottom. And if that's the case, you're just going to have to get what we call it gain access. Do what you got to do to get the bolts and the nuts you need to get that thing off. Did it lock up completely?
No, it's does it more when it's cold out. It'll do shut the engine down, and you'll get the whining noise, and I check both electric cooling motors, and it isn't done. But it's definitely on the driver's side.
Okay. All right. Well, does it have that little bitty drive belt that runs it?
I don't think so.
Okay. So does it run off of the normal fan belt?
No. From what I understand, there's two lines connected to it.
Okay, so is it electric? Are you thinking it's electric?
Yes, it is. There's an electric motor that drives it. In other words, they've had issues. There was a bolting out on that a while back where it brings in the air. There's too much water would get to the motor, and it would start having an effect on the motor. And they devised a new hose to go onto the motor to bring in the air, and that goes into your as far as the emissions goes.
Okay, well, we're sucking in clean and we're pushing out air under slight pressure into the exhaust system to help fire up the cat. My question is you need to be sure. So the first thing I would do is I would find the electrical connection to the electric motor, and I would disconnect that and make sure that the noise goes away, because if you disconnect it and the noise is still there, then it's not going to be that electric pump. It's going to be the water pump or something else, okay?
Yep. Okay, Mark.
All right. Good luck to you, buddy. Good luck.
Okay. You take care.
Bye. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you'd like to join us, you sure can. A couple of the things I want to talk to you about is I have a receipt here in front of me, and it's from an auto parts store, and it was given to a customer. And it talks about troubleshooting code 154. And then it says definition. The circuit condition is the heated oxygen sensor bank 1, sensor 1, And then it gives an explanation. A powertrain control module, the PC in your car, uses the oxygen sensor to adjust fuel and air mixture. That's all true. And then it says probable cause, oxygen sensor failure. So as it stands, you read to that point there and you say to yourself, I have a bad oxygen sensor. And of course, this auto parts store is more than happy to sell you an oxygen sensor. But you must read down a little further, and you have to know what I know and what other technicians know. It says at the very bottom that there are other codes, and one of the codes is we have very high or very low fuel pump pressure. Now, let me explain the difference here. This is a lean code. Otherwise, the computer's saying, I want more fuel. Give me more fuel. That's what the computer's saying. And the fuel system is either incapable of providing that fuel or the oxygen sensor is lying about the need of the fuel. So you can see how those three things work together. Okay? Well, I've said before, I object to the auto parts people sending out a kid with three whiskers that got out of high school day before yesterday and telling you how to fix your car based on this little $10 component that he plugs into your car. Only 25% of the time when you have an oxygen sensor code do you actually need an oxygen sensor. A plugged fuel filter will cause an oxygen sensor code. A vacuum leak will cause an oxygen sensor code. An ignition misfire will cause an oxygen sensor code. But in this particular case, this car has substandard fuel pressure, which means if there isn't appropriate fuel pressure, then there isn't going to be appropriate fuel delivery, and the oxygen sensor is complaining about the fuel delivery. Are you getting where I'm going?
Picking it up.
Are you picking it up? So this is a situation where, and let me put it to you in a different fashion. Let's pretend there's a water faucet, a fuel faucet, okay? Mm-hmm. You're the computer, Andy. The oxygen sensor says, I want more fuel. So what do?
Turn the faucet.
Open.
Yeah, open.
All right. And I say, I need more fuel. I need more fuel. And what are you going to keep doing?
Keep pumping out fuel.
There's going to come a time where you stop.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? When you stop, you can't give me any more fuel. If I keep yelling, give me more fuel, there's something wrong with me or you, right?
Yes.
Either you're not giving me the fuel you think you're giving me, or I'm lying about the amount of fuel that I'm seeing.
Mm-hmm.
That's how it works. So this piece of paper means nothing. And here's what I think bothers me. There's two things that bother me about this piece of paper. Number one, they're going to sell you an oxygen sensor that you don't need. You clearly don't need.
Yeah.
And you know what bothers me in number two? It's number two is you're not going to hold them to the same standards you hold me to. Because you're not going to go back and say, I want my money back. This didn't fix my problem. You don't do that. Because you didn't pay any diagnostic charges. You didn't pay anything. So the idea is that I'm mad because they just ripped you off for the money, for the oxygen sensor. And I'm also mad at you, the customer, because when I do something, I mean, there's times where I change your oil and I replace your air filter and I put the old filter in a box and put it in your car. And you come back and say, you know, my filter was replaced 2 days ago. And I say, okay, well, let's look at what I took out. Oh, here it is. And you say, I don't believe you. And I say, fine, I give you your money back. So you hold me to a higher standard than you do that three-whiskered kid, but that three-whiskered kid's job is to sell you parts that and he's only guessing about the need for parts. And so that's the point. The point is just simply that. 602-508-0960, our lines are wide open. Andy and I are here to help you out. Andy actually works at our repair shop, and Andy has worked at our repair shop since 1994. It's a long time. And she's only 20. Oh, that was such a long time. We'll be back right after this in just about 3 minutes. Welcome back, everybody. 32 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Sitting next to me is AJ. We call her Andy. She is my right hand, my left hand, and she actually is most of my brain today. And she's helping me out. And I'll tell you a story, but we're going to tell you real quick about Action Auto Repair. He's on Deer Valley in the I-17 in the northwest corner of the intersection of I-17 and Deer Valley. And Tom and his repair shop, Action Auto, is on our list because they deserve it. They have a BMW-certified technician. They do domestic and import cars. They have ASE-certified master technicians that work on your car, so that means they're going to diagnose it properly, they're going to repair it properly, they're going to verify that their repair actually fixed your problem properly, and they're going to come in underneath their estimate. That's the whole idea. So Tom and Action Auto deserve it to be on our list. It can be found at MarkSalem.com. MarkSalem.com, I-17 in Deer Valley in Phoenix. Let's go to the phones and go to Roger. Roger, good morning. How can we help you?
Top of morning. Question, I have a 2010 Ford Escape, and it's got about 65,000 miles on it. The code came up that transmission doesn't change to fifth gear too well. It sort of slipped.
Okay.
And the code came up and said control assembly, valve body. And I looked at the oil, and oil is black. And I changed the oil, I replaced it, hoping maybe that might resolve it, but it's not. But the changing the control body, is that a difficult job to do?
Well, the valve body, it not only is it difficult to do, you're going to be dealing with lots of little springs and lots of little balls, and you better not disconnect the wrong plate and have five springs pop out and balls fall all over the floor, because you're in real big trouble when that happens.
I see. I thought it was all one complete unit when you buy it. I thought it was a one unit. You just replace it.
It's possible. The guys that work on transmissions for a living will take it apart, find out the problem, and fix it.
And yeah, I was here going to change the whole unit itself. And
well, here's the problem. The computer knows that it's asking for a command to go into fifth gear, but the transmission's incapable of doing that. So it's setting the code for, hey, I don't see fifth gear. I'm asking for it, but I don't get it. The question is the transmission really getting that command? And so that's what a scanner does. A code reader doesn't do that. A scanner does that. And a technician that works on transmissions is going to manually shift your gears 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and overdrive and lock up. And he's going to run it through its paces. And he's going to – I'm afraid for you, you're certainly free to do whatever you want. But last week was a tough week in Mark Salem's life. And I had people come in, and I actually spent quite a bit of this week in the office. And I'm telling you, I had three or four guys come in that have spent two and three times as much as I would have charged them to diagnose the problem.
Sure.
And I'm not saying just me. I'm saying there's lots of shops out there. I strongly suggest that you spend the $75, $85, $95 to have somebody diagnose your problem. Because it's possible that you got some ground-up metal in that transmission. It's possible that you've got something terribly wrong in the transmission, and it's possible that that you putting on a brand new valve body is kind of like putting on a new filter, and within days or weeks, that valve body will lose third gear or second gear because of the contamination throughout the transmission. And at that point, you have wasted a tremendous amount of money.
Well, the part itself is about $1.10, so I figure for $110, it's worth me for a couple of hours to get up underneath there and switch it out and take a chance that way.
Okay, and like I said, if that's what you want to do, but there also you have three solenoids in that transmission, and they provide all the gears. And so all three closed is one gear, all three open is one gear, and then combinations of open, closed, closed, open, open, closed, you know how that works. Well, what happens if you've got a solenoid problem? Or what happens if it's commanding fifth gear, but it doesn't go into fifth gear, and the transmission and the computer's guessing wrong about the valve body?
I see.
You see? And the valve body is controlled by the three solenoids. So if you have a bad solenoid, you may do the valve body, and if that doesn't do it, then you do something else, and if that doesn't do it, then you go get all three solenoids, and really all you needed is one at the very beginning. I'm just scared that you're going to spend more money and time. But I can tell you this much. If you buy the new valve body for your $110, I'm pretty sure it's going to be complete. So follow the directions and read them three times before you pull that old valve body off, and you better hope it doesn't come apart in pieces. However, the valve body typically comes with the valve body and a plate on top of it, and that whole assembly bolts on to the bottom of the transmission.
I see. And then I was going to bring it to – I guess I got to bring it to the dealer and have them flash the computer.
Well, it would depend. It would depend on the outcome of you putting in a new valve body. The dealer's not the only guy in the world that can flash your car.
Oh, well, I thought they had the equipment.
The cost is this. It's about $40 worth of labor, and it's about $85 for permission to go to the cloud and download the software for your car. So that's the reason why it's $125. It's not exactly a profit maker for anybody.
No,
the bottom line is, but I don't think you have to tell it needs a new valve body. I think you just put the valve body in, pull the negative cable, pull the valve body, replace the valve body, put the negative cable back on, start it up, run it through the gears, go drive it and see what happens.
2 minutes.
Perfect.
Okay.
Appreciate it.
All right.
Have
thank
a great
you.
Weekend. Thank you.
You bet. Thank you. All righty. Let's, that's what kind of, I get scared, and I just, as long as you let me tell you that I'm scared, you're going to spend more money guessing. Do you see that very often?
Yeah, we see it all the time.
Yesterday, a guy came in, and he had a noise underneath the front of his car, and he's already done lower control arms, and he's done this, and he's done that, and he's done this, and he's done that. And this guy's probably spent $300 or $400 in just parts alone, and he still has a clunk that he started with. I had Louis go take a drive with him, and Louis says, this is not going to be a problem. And so the guy made an appointment to bring his car back in, I think Monday.
Yeah.
And Monday he'll bring it back in, and we'll diagnose what the problem is. Here's the important part. The noise hasn't changed since he's done all this work, which means he's not even close to the
exactly.
problem. Had it changed when he did the work, then he tightened the bolt or he loosened the bolt or whatever. But that's the hard part. Joe, I want you to stay right there because you're going to be my next caller, but I'm going to have to take a break here in just another minute and three
One
seconds.
Minute.
And anybody else that would like to join us, you're welcome, 602-508-0960. And Automatic Transmission Exchange in Phoenix is another good place to go to if you have transmission problems. He's at 40th Street in Washington, and he's open on Saturdays from 8 to 2 for your convenience. So if you have a transmission problem and you're looking for the oldest guy in Phoenix, the guy that's been around the longest, the guy who's been in business in the same location since 1968, and Phil and his staff are really great guys. They know what they're doing. They're transmission diagnostic experts. And not only that, is they know all the older cars, because when you look at Phil, you'll know Phil wasn't born yesterday. So if you've got a Power Glide or you've got some old Buick automatic out of a 40 Buick, Phil knows how to work on those too. That's Automatic Transmission Exchange. We call it ATE, 40th Street in Washington in Phoenix. My name is Mark Salem, Andy Salem sitting here next to me, and we'll be back right after this.
Hi, I'm
after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Andy Salem sitting here next to me, and we're at your service here and under the hood every Saturday from 10 to 12 right here on 960 The Patriot. We talk about cars, and if you'd like to join us, the lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. We're going to take Joe. Joe, you're up first, buddy. How can I help you?
How often should you change that air filter in a car, do you think?
You know, that's a very difficult question, and I've got some ladies in Ahwatukee that I do business with. They do business with me, and I may not change their air filter for 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And then I've got some cowboys that come in on oil changes at 5,000 and 6,000 and 8,000 miles, and I do it every time.
Well, I've got 59,000 miles in the car, and I changed it once in the last 12 years. And I only put 30,000 miles on in the last 12 years.
Yeah. Well, and you did the work yourself, right?
Yes.
Okay, so you – and here's the beauty of what you're telling me. I know that Joe knows what a used one looks like and what a new one's looked like because he's had both of them in his hand, right?
I think so.
Absolutely.
Tell,
of course you have. So I know that you – and then when you take that air filter out and you – hit it on the ground a couple of times, and if it throws up a big dust cloud and a whole bunch of, you know, dinosaurs come out of it and dust and rocks and flies and stuff like that, then you say, okay, well, I need a new one.
Yeah.
But if you take it and you beat it on the ground and nothing comes out of it, and you look up at the sun and you say, oh, I can see through this, and it may be a little dusty, but it's not laden in dirt, it's not laden in mud, you beat it out, then you put it back in, you're done.
Yeah.
So I think you've done a good job. It shows that you're not traveling a lot of dirt roads, and it shows that you probably put your car in the garage at night.
All the time.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's no problem. Look at the money you've saved by doing one or two oil filters and the mileage that you have.
That's the air filter.
Air filter. That's what I mean.
Yeah.
Air filter.
Maybe I should just change it anyway or have it changed. I mean, they're hard to change.
Yes, and most shops will replace your air filter for free. Do you do your own oil changes?
Not anymore.
Okay. The oil change that you're looking for should be about $35 to $45.
Yeah.
And your air filter is probably going to be a panel air filter. Is it a flat air filter?
No, it's up in there somewhere. It's an 01 Oldsmobile Silhouette minivan. And It's hard to get to that thing.
Okay. I can assure you on a 1 to 10 scale that seasoned technicians would smile when you said that, because it's not a 10 or it's not an 8 and it's not a 6. It's probably a 2 to them, and it's probably a 5 or a 6 or a 7 to a normal person.
Right.
So really and truly, I don't know the last time we charged to replace an air filter. A cabin filter is different, but
yeah,
an engine air filter, I don't believe we've ever charged. So I would think that what you'd want them to do is can you check my air filter, and if it's dirty, would you replace it? But before you start throwing it away, can I look at it? And would you just kind of clean all the bugs out of the box at the same time? Thank you very much. That's what you say. Okay?
Yeah. Well, okay, I'll just have it changed. And they're not that much money anyway.
No, they aren't. They aren't. All righty.
Okay, and thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you very much. And let me tell you real quick about IMM Auto Service. IMM Auto Service is in the northeast corner of Tempe. He's south of the 202 and west of the 101. David's worked at IMM for a very, very long time, 1972. David works on cars that nobody else wants to, and David is very good at cars that nobody else wants to. He's really good at Volvos and Saabs and Fiats and Alfa Romeos. He does domestic and import cars. But if you have a Volvo, a Saab, a Fiat, or Alfa Romeo, you really need to get with David and introduce yourself to him, because he's the kind of place that you're going to want. Just the other day, there was a Saab story that went like this. Was it a Saab or a Volvo?
It was a Saab.
Okay, hold on a minute. Let me turn on your mic. What is it?
It was a Saab.
The Saab was one shop said that the repair was
a fuse box.
Okay, a fuse box for how many dollars?
I think it was somewhere around $800, and the part was hard to find or obsolete, or they couldn't track it down.
And it went to a shop, and the shop fixed it with a relay
mm-hmm.
and a bad connection,
mm-hmm.
and that bill was?
And a headlight bulb.
Mm-hmm. And how much was the bill?
I think it was $150, maybe.
Okay.
Somewhere around there.
And that's why you have to find the right shop. This happened to be I think it was a Volvo.
It was a Volvo. It was a 97X, I believe.
Yeah, it was a 97X, which is really
a Chevrolet Trailblazer.
But the one shop bid it for a fuse panel, and here's the problem. Is after the fuse panel's been replaced, the problem is still there.
Mm-hmm.
And when the problem is still there, then the shop's really in big trouble. And if you're good, you're going to say, I'm not going to pay for a repair that didn't fix my problem. It sounds like you sold me a guess, and I want to buy a fix. And that's how that transition works. So anyway, IMM is a great guy. He's got master technicians that work for him. He's been around, like I said, since 1972. IMM Auto Service, a great guy to go to. Harry, can I help you this morning? What can I do for you?
Sure can, Mark. Sounds like you had some gremlins in your transmitter.
You know, Harry, it's just the luck of the draw. Harry, I feel like we know one another really well. I got to tell you about something really exciting yesterday. Okay, I'm going to tell you this. Yesterday, we all met at Benihana's mm-hmm. for dinner. There was 10 or 12 of us. We got Andy, my daughter, and her husband. We got Alan, my son, and his wife Heather, and they got the grandkids. And we had Renee's mom there, and we were celebrating Renee's birthday and our anniversary. Now, Harry, we've been married 42 years, but she tells
it's a miracle. It is a miracle.
we've been married 42 years, Harry, and she's only 29.
Wow.
Okay, that's what you
were farsighted.
So anyway, afterwards, I want my granddaughters, if they're going to have their ears pierced, I want to be the first male to buy them diamonds. So
sounds
we
good.
Took Andy's daughter Josie, who's what, 6 months old?
Yeah.
6 months old. After we left Benihana's, we went to the Fiesta Mall. Well, no, it's not Fiesta Mall.
It's Chandler Mall.
We went to Chandler Mall. We found a place that does earrings.
Mm-hmm.
They loaded her ears with these little guns. They pulled the trigger at the same time, and then we put some diamonds in there for right now, and mm-hmm. then I bought her another set. That little girl just kind of made a sad face for a minute.
Yeah.
And then
wow.
she didn't cry. No tears.
No tears.
And
it was amazing.
She just rebounded immediately. And then we went directly to Zales. And so this is the second granddaughter that's had ears pierced. But it was funny because the women, my wife and my mother-in-law and Andy and Heather, they're all shaking in their boots, and this is that and this and that. And Phil, Andy's husband, and we're going, she probably was not going to know it. That little trooper never said a word. Never. Wow, it was just click, one. Click. Yeah. It would have made me cry, but it didn't make her cry.
I think it hurt all of us more than it hurt her.
Yeah. That's my dad-to-dad story, but I'm ready for your car story. What's up?
Okay. I know a few months ago you were talking about some of the automobiles using a flammable type gas in their air conditioning system.
Yes.
Is that isobutane?
You know, I don't know what it is because I don't have that in front of me. But the new refrigerant that's supposed to replace 134 has somewhere, depends on who you talk to, between 1 and 2 and 3% of a flammable gas. And I want to tell you already that there's YouTubes out there that they talk about, they drill a hole in one of the lines and then they light it with a torch and it flames and it does this and does that. The chances of your car catching fire with that kind of a 2%, 3%, you know, value of Freon that you've got in your air conditioning system is pretty slim, but it still is a possibility. And so our industry is really upset about it. And the yell and screaming that's going on is that I'm going to put an explosion value butane or propane in this new car. And when it has a crash and the condenser blows up underneath the dash behind the glove box and the lady gets some aluminum embedded in her legs, then I'm going to be sued. Well, the story I just told you, I think you're a fireman, aren't you?
Yes, retired fireman.
All right. How many times have you seen an air conditioning system catch fire?
Oh, boy. I can't remember. Well, it's kind of hard to tell if it's burning or you don't really know what started.
You're right. But 12 and 1.
Gasoline.
Yeah, 12 and 134 don't have flammable properties. Where you're going to get the air conditioning that's really do blow up and really do catch fire and really do cause problems is you've got some of the gray-haired guys out in Sun City who believe that just using straight propane and is an appropriate refrigerant. And I must say to you that they say it works. And in cars that I've seen that have been charged with propane, propane is a viable refrigerant, but it's certainly not anything I want, because now you've got a flammable index of a whole bunch more than 2%.
Well, let me tell you something else, too, that I found out just yesterday. I was down looking for a freezer for my house.
Uh-huh.
And they had one, and I'm looking at it. It was a name brand and everything, and I'm looking it over, measuring it, and tell the gal, says, well, do you have any that are still in the, you know, the box? So I'm looking at it, and it says, has a danger deal on the outside part of the cardboard saying, you know, danger, flammable refrigerant. And it was, they had a name there, was isobutane, and then also a little further over they said R600A.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, this is going to be in my house.
Yes.
you know, we used to have, years ago, you can probably maybe still remember, they had sulfur dioxide, the old one.
Yes.
Well, if that leaked, boy, that was really bad. That drove you out of the house. Or
and everybody else, too.
And everybody else. Yeah, it was real bad. Then they, you know, went to the fluoride type stuff, and it got a lot better and everything. But I'm just wondering about that. Of course, it said on the box, made in China, and I'm thinking, well, is this only...
The 22... The R22, which is typically used in appliances and commercial units and air conditioning units like on the roof of our shop, the R22 is being replaced by that 600. And it has some flammable properties as well. And like I said, everybody's really kind of concerned about it. But I did see a YouTube from a technician who opened up a valve on a can and then held his lighter over there. And he couldn't get the refrigerant to light. But admittedly, between you and me, he had the valve open quite a bit. So we were blowing quite a volume across his flame. I wish he would have turned the volume down a little bit and then maybe used a propane torch. The problem is he's holding a hand grenade in his hand, because if it catches fire of the stream out the mouth of the container, if it goes into that container, he's in big trouble. But I want to tell you that I'm not real concerned about it right now. I've talked to the insurance company people, and they're saying that they're not paying any claims about flammable refrigeration, which means that at a 1 to 2%, that's no big deal. And I'll give you another example, another analogy that I think is important. people put that stop leak and inside their tires,
right?
That sealer, that has flammable properties of sometimes between 10% and 40%. And we're not seeing tires blow up or catch fire or anything like that. So I'm not real worried about the 1% to 2%. The MSDS sheet on that refrigerator you looked at would tell you what the percentage is, but I'm quite sure that 600 is 1% or 2% or 3%.
Well, it just kind of bored me because I wasn't expecting to see that.
Yeah. It's going to be everywhere. It's going to be everywhere. So,
do you know what cars that are there that have this new refrigerant in it?
It's my understanding that Mercedes is going to be the first, but today we don't have. And I'll tell you right now, today, I have hundreds, if not thousands, of pounds of refrigerant available in our parts department, and we're still using 12 and 134 on a regular basis, and we don't have anything new, and I haven't had to buy anything new. So even though there's been lots of talk, I've not run it. But in addition to that, Harry, I don't see cars till they're out of warranty.
Right.
So it's going to be 3 years after we see our first car that I'm going to see that. But I don't also see anybody calling me up saying, have you bought any of the new equipment for the new refrigerant that's now flammable? I haven't had those kinds of calls either. So usually we trade those kinds of calls within our industry, from me to the dealers to me, and so forth and so on. So I don't know if it's something I'm going to worry about right now.
Right.
All righty.
Okay. Well, have a good day.
Thank you,
Harry. Go better with your transmitter.
Yeah, thank you very much. Oh boy. It's just sometimes how does that saying go? Sometimes you eat the bear and sometimes he eats you, or something like that, or you know, it's just something, it's just the luck of the draw.
Mm-hmm.
It's the luck of the draw. There is a bill in California that it says the California Senate Committee on Environmental Quality approved legislation that would ensure all automotive engine oil sold in California provide 10,000 miles of lubrication. They're mandating. Now, that's a synthetic oil.
Full synthetic?
A full synthetic.
Okay.
So, basically, that exists. Right now, we're seeing millions of Californians paying for motor oil that performs poorly and requires expensive oil changes too often. Performs poorly is just flat out BS, okay? Because there's no oil on the market that doesn't meet minimum standards. And folks, we have three oils. We have conventional, a blended semi-synthetic, and a full synthetic. They're saying this 10,000 miles parameters is a full synthetic. In any brand, a full synthetic. But they talk about this is the reason why we want this law, because we have oils that perform poorly. If you take a conventional and run it 10,000 miles, it's not supposed to run 10,000 miles. It's supposed to run 3,000 to 4,000 miles. So it'll perform poorly when you take it out of the range it's designed for.
Yeah, you got to use it within its application or how it's supposed to be used.
Perfect. Absolutely perfect. In addition to that, synthetic will do the same. If synthetic has a 10 or a 12,000 stopping point and you run it 15 to 18, it's going to perform poorly. It's no different. Your tires, you're supposed to replace them at 2 or 3:30 seconds. If you take them to the bald, till they're bald, then they're not going to perform adequately. In addition, many drivers spend 2 to 3% more on gasoline because of low-quality oil causes a decrease in fuel economy, and over the course of 15,000 miles, which is 1 year, these drivers spend an average of $45 more on gasoline. What they don't tell you is what does the average person spend on gasoline, and I can guarantee you this much. That $45 can be just who's hitting the throttle, okay? Look at your brother Alan.
Oh, yeah.
All right? He doesn't get good fuel economy because he doesn't know anything except idle and wide open throttle.
Yeah, just like you.
And your mother. She's is another good example of that kind of stuff. So anyway, California, another crazy.
I know.
Crazy,
yeah, I was just going to say, you love California.
I don't. You know what? Let those fruits and nuts stay over there. You know, I think Trump ought to close the Colorado River so they can't come east as far as I'm concerned. But that's a story. We'll be back right after this.
That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, you got another hour of Andy and I, and we're here to help you with your car questions and car problems, do our best to guide you appropriately. We want you to know that your interests are a long way in front of our own, that we don't have any agenda. Our job is to help you get your car fixed right the first time, and we'll do what we can to arm you with the right questions, what to say, what not to say, and then also we'll help you refine your symptoms. I had an email the other day, a very long email from a guy who had a bunch of work done. And he had vehicle A and it had a problem, and he got vehicle B and it had a problem, and vehicle C had the same problem. And I said to him, I need you to focus on these really good symptoms, and I need you to put delete in your brain about all the rest of this stuff, because he said stuff in there that was a misdirection. So here's what really is. Well, for instance, it was, I drove, when the car stalls, it's almost always on a hot day, and it's almost always when I'm pulling a trailer and when I'm getting off the freeway. But one time, and most of the time it starts right up, but one time it started and it ran really bad, and it took almost 20 minutes for it to clear up. Those are important things. Mm-hmm. Those are important things. Then he talks about internet. And I said, delete, delete, delete. Folks, you are never going to fix your car on the internet.
It's kind of like going to WebMD or, yeah, you know, you have a cough and you start Googling something and all of a sudden you have some terminal illness.
It's true. It's true. Let me tell you a funny story. The other day I was working on my quad up at the ranch, mm-hmm, and I found the air filter box full of oil. And by the way, your husband did this. Okay. So the air filter box is full of oil. So I Googled Polaris 850 air box full of oil, and all hell breaks loose. And there's got to be 400,000 ideas about what's wrong. I figured it out.
I'm surprised you even needed to Google that.
Nope. It was self-inflicted. We did it.
Really?
Yeah. You know how a clean fanatic I am, okay? I'm a clean guy.
Yeah.
After we went up to look where Phil got his elk, and the things were all muddy, I said to Phil, I'm going to lock the brakes and we're going to lift up the front of the machine and stand on its butt so the machine is vertical, and we're going to wash the underside off.
Mm-hmm.
I caused that.
Gotcha.
There was one guy in there that said, I had mine turn over, and that's when I found oil in the and I'm thinking to myself, holy mackerel. So then when I took the air filter box out and cleaned it all up, I looked at the PCV valve system, and lo and behold, it feeds off the back of the valve cover, which is the lowest part, and all the oil goes to the back of the valve cover when you stand it up. So it's your husband's fault. I couldn't have lifted it up without his help, but it's Phil's fault.
Yeah.
That's all there is to it. It's his fault. So there was people out there that were buying a 2012 valve cover, and they were looking at the Labyrinth plate, and the O-ring is bad, and this and that, and guys would say, I tried that, and it didn't work. But one little voice out there just keyed my head and said, you know what, I caused that myself.
And it's nice when they, you know, post that kind of stuff when they have those problems, but then follow up and say, hey, I've done this, and this fixed it, or it didn't, because a lot of times they're throwing ideas out there and nobody knows what's going on.
And fixing your car by that is just the worst thing in the world. You are letting someone else guess on the repair of your car, and they're doing it with your money.
Mm-hmm.
That would be like you insisting that I tell you how to fix a clunk underneath your car, because all I can do is guess. And I'm a master technician. I've been a master technician since 1990. I've been ASC certified since 1985. But I reached my master levels in 1990. What's that, 25 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
26 years ago. So anyway, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. In 1988, when I first started doing radio, the number one question I had was, "Is where's your shop, Mark?" And I just didn't feel like that was what I wanted to make a radio show about, so I would guide them to other shops in town. And out of that came the Best Car Repair Shops list, the very first referral network in the state of Arizona, and if not the world. We just decided that we were going to highlight places. Quality Transmission's on that list. He deserves to be on that list. He's in Tempe. He's on McClintock, north of University in Tempe. He's south of the 202 on McClintock. He deserves to be on the list. He's been on the list for probably 20 years. But Quality Transmission is well worth the time. They'll drive your car, and they'll speak to you for free, and they'll talk to you for free. But they're not going to diagnose your car for free. They're not going to do a bunch of work, pull the oil pan off, run pressure tests, and scan it. They're not going to do that for free. But they can at least answer the most important question when you have a transmission problem, and that's this. Is this truly a transmission problem, or is this an engine problem? And they're really good at that. A lot of times people bring their cars to me and say, oh, it's an engine problem. And I'll say, no, it's a transmission problem. And they'll take it to a transmission shop. And if I'm right, then the transmission shop will say, yeah, this is our problem. That's a hard thing to come to diagnose, but they can do it really good. Quality transmission. Good place to go. All righty. Shall we call California some more? Folks, when California wants everybody to have 10,000 mile oil, there's a lot of cars out there that are going to. This is the bad news about that. How often do you check your oil, Andy, in your car?
I don't ever check it.
Okay, fair enough. What's your oil change interval?
About 5,500, I think.
Okay, fair enough. That's okay. You've heard me say many, many times that you should start checking your oil about 5,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot afford to, if you do a full synthetic oil and you're going to go 10,000 miles, you cannot afford to try to go 10,000 miles on a Honda with 4 quarts in it, because that son of a gun will have 1 or 2 quarts at the end of 10,000 miles, mm-hmm. and you're going to cause engine damage. By telling everybody they have to have this fancy-dancy oil that already exists. California's pretending like they're going to go muscle the oil companies into making this oil.
Yeah.
Well, it already exists. So they're going to mandate that everybody in California, including all those junkers that have those flowered vans, those VW vans, and the love children and all that kind of stuff, they're going to mandate that they're going to put full synthetic oil in their cars, and they're going to go 10,000 miles. I can tell you right now that 20% of all the cars that do that are going to end up in the junkyard because people don't check their oil now, and they're going to run out of oil, mm-hmm. not because synthetic is drinkable and conventional is not. It's because that's what cars do,
yeah.
is they consume oil as the oil gets dirtier. So you can't afford to go 10,000 miles and never pull the dipstick. And I tell folks all the time, at the 5,000-mile mark, every other gas fill-up, pull the stick and look at it.
Yeah.
The difference now, when is the oil dipstick say you're a quart low? Where is the oil on the dipstick?
When it says you're a quart low?
Yeah, when you have to add a quart.
Gosh, I don't know.
At the add mark.
Okay.
Right at the add mark, not below the add mark, at the add mark. Because the difference between the add mark and the full mark is 1 quart.
Okay.
So when you get to the add mark, you're a quart low. We have people that will say, well, I added a quart. Where was it? Well, it was halfway between the add and the full. Well, then you overfilled
mm-hmm.
it. The add mark on every car in the whole wide world, the add mark is a quart low.
Okay.
The problem, again, with full synthetic and long oil change intervals is nobody checks their oil.
Well, yeah, and how many people actually get their oil change done right on time?
Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody, I mean, not even you.
No.
I look at your record sometimes, and you say 5,500, and I see 6,500.
Yeah.
I see those. And your mom. I mean, boy, you know, I don't dare put conventional oil in for a 3,000 or 4,000 mile oil change interval, because she'll triple that. We'll do. Oh, I thought you put synthetic in it.
All those trips to Nordstrom.
Oh, yes. She's going to kill you for that. She's going to kill you for that. She gets mad every time I mention Nordstrom's. And she says, you never say Target. I say, I don't even know where Target is.
Ruben is your first call.
Oh, God. Ruben, save me from myself. I'm probably in big trouble anyway, but how can I help you today, buddy?
Okay, well, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I have a question on the SLK 350. I was reading that sometimes they have problems with, transmission issues in terms of shifting, that kind of thing. I'm not sure.
Well, is there a particular year do you have an SL350?
2006.
Okay, 2006. And give me that transmission again, because you're kind of breaking up on me. So,
I apologize.
That's all right.
Sometimes I might be, taken off from an intersection or something, and taken off, and it seems to... doesn't shift properly.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Does it seem to start in first gear and then maybe skip second and go to third?
It seems like that might be.
Okay.
It's very infrequent.
Okay, well, let me give you the menu. Or does it start off in second gear and hold it out extra long? Or is it holding out first gear too long or too short? because those are the menu that I just given you the menu, and those are the shift issues from what we call a stop. So sometimes first gear goes like this. It'll go in, and it should go in. That's normal. Sometimes it'll shift too early. It'll go in.
2 minutes.
And at third, you're in third gear by the time you're doing 10 miles an hour. Sometimes it'll hold first gear out really tall, really high RPMs, and then kind of shift really hard into second gear.
It seems to be doing that, and again, very infrequent.
Okay. The very first thing you want to do on your car to help you, the transmission shop diagnose it, is I want you to take over the manual aspect of the shifting. I want you to manipulate the shifter and pull it into first. And I want you to shift the car. And I want you to tell the transmission shop that when I shift it, I like the shift pattern and it seems and feels normal. When I let the transmission shift itself, then I don't like the shift pattern, and it's clearly different than it has been. Now, that, do you save yourself $50 in diagnostic money when you say that kind of thing, if it's true, of course? Because when you manually take over the transmission shifting, then you're telling the computer, I got this. And so the computer kind of says, okay, fine. And it's going to let you decide how to shift. When the transmission looks at the computer is looking at as many as 20 different sensors. It looks at throttle activity. It looks at brake lights. It looks at the speedometer. It looks at the load of the engine. It looks at how much fuel is being delivered to the engine. It's looking at the four tire speed. It's looking at the transmission tail shaft speed. It looks at all of this stuff. And the computer, that your computer and your Mercedes can read the Bible, 3,000 Bibles in 1 second. It's 300 Bibles in 1 second. It's 300 Bibles. So there's a lot going on. So what happens is we lose an input. So all of a sudden the speed sensor says 16, 17, and the computer wants to shift into second gear at 18, but all of a sudden it goes 16, 12, 16, 12, 18. And when that happens, the computer's going to be confused and the shift pattern's going to look stupid and ugly. But a good guy is going to plug in a scanner and go drive that car, because you're going to give him the symptoms and teach him how to make it happen. And when that happens, he's going to be watching the speed sensor. He's going to be watching the wheel sensors. He's going to be watching the throttle all on the same screen. And boom, he's going to see that speed sensor is dropping out. So he says, you have a transmission problem, but it's not related to the transmission. It's related to the speed sensor. I'll just fix it. And that's what it works out. Thank you very much, Ruben. Good luck to you. Good luck to you. And there's good transmission shops on my website, marksalem.com. They're all good guys, and they know what to do, and they'll tell you if they aren't the best shop for your repair. And most of the time, they'll refer you to somebody who is. Mercedes-Benz or a car all of their own, and you know that. 602-508-0960. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960. We've got a lot of people on the line, so we're going to tell you about Larry Harkers real quick. Larry Harkers has been in business since 1967. He's on 38th Avenue and Indian School. And if 5 miles north of him, 5 miles south of him, 5 miles east and west of him, there is no other Mark Salem recommended shop, because he's so doggone good, and shops that are good are hard to find. So if you live anywhere near 38th Avenue and Indian School, know this. Larry Harkers is well known by the rest of the repair shops in that area, who oftentimes take their more difficult cars to have Bob diagnose them. So Larry Harkers is a good place. They do good diagnosis. They've been around a very long time, and they're a good shop, and they are a proud member of the Mark Salem Best Car Repair Shops in Phoenix. And you can find that list at marksalem.com. Mary, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. I want to let you know I check my oil all the time. In fact, I check it for all my family, so that water and oil.
Good for you. Good for you.
Because I know that radiator will wreck the engine if they let it have a leak that they don't notice. But anyway, my question is about the oil. I see that I've got vehicles. I drive Toyotas, so I have 200,000 miles on all of them. And I always see the filters that say for high mileage and the oil that says for high mileage, and I'm always paying a lot more. Is that worth it?
No.
Okay, that's what I thought.
No. I want to tell you something. It's a marketing strategy. If the minimum oil filter standard happens to be 4 microns, and I want to tell you something, I have a 5 micron filter on the drinking water at our ranch, and I've had some pretty swanky people in there, and if they ask me, you know, and I'm pulling water out of the ground, and I'm running it through a 5 micron filter and then a UV light to just kill any germs. Really and truly, there's no byproducts. As a matter of fact, the faucets in Tempe have yuckier water in them than our ranch water does. So if I said to you, I'm going to take your 5 micron oil filter away from you, and I'm going to give you a 4 micron. This is, micron is a millionth of a meter. A millionth of 39 inches. I suggest to you that spending that extra money for this fault sense of security does one thing. Two things. It rips you off, and number two, it makes them more money. And that's what it's all about, is high mileage oil and high mileage oil filters. You're doing really good at 200,000 miles. I'm impressed. So whatever you're doing, you just keep doing, but skip spending that extra money for that fault sense of security.
Okay, and how often should I change the oil? I drive around town all the time, every day,
okay.
All day long.
All right, there's three kinds of oil. On a conventional oil, the oil change interval is 3,000 to 5,000 miles. If you use a blended oil, and my shop sells only blended oil, blended is half conventional, half synthetic. A blended oil is 5,000 to 7,000 miles, and then a synthetic oil is 8,000 north. So it really depends on your oil. Your oil change interval is dictated by what kind of oil you have. So if you use like a conventional oil, then 3,000 to 5,000 miles is inappropriate. Do you drive that many miles in a year or more?
Yes, I drive a lot. I put on probably almost 100 miles a day.
Okay, so that's 500 miles a week.
All city, yeah.
Okay, so you're putting 25,000 miles a month or a year?
36. Yes, maybe 30, yeah.
Okay, so if that's the case, what I would suggest that you do is you could do, if you're doing 30,000 miles a year and you're changing your oil every 3,000 miles, that's 10 oil changes. Is my math right?
Yes, uh-huh.
But if you went to synthetic oil, you'd only do 3 oil changes. Because you do 10, 20, and 30.
Okay.
So, right?
Yeah, and what are you using currently?
I use the cheapest oil at Walmart, the Walmart
okay.
brand.
Then that's okay. the 3,000 to 5,000 mile. But if you went from 3,000 miles to 5,000 miles, then you'd go from 10 oil changes to 6 oil changes, and that's well within the parameters of the oil that you're buying.
Okay.
So if you went to, and I'm especially enamored because you check your oil on a regular basis, mm-hmm. that eliminates. Let me tell you why that's so important. If we did 30 engines last year, 28 of them were overheated, or 28 of them were run low on oil, one or the other, right?
Yeah.
Every one right. of them is self-inflicted by the nut behind the wheel. And most of them have California plates. Or water.
Yeah. Right.
Two motors last year were actually just simply gave up the ghost. Through no fault of the driver. Not too long ago, the Arizona Attorney General's office said something about a car that has over 100,000 miles is inherently unsafe and undependable, blah, blah, blah. And I looked, and I have 45, 50,000 vehicles in my fleet, and it was like 31% of the cars fell in that 100,000 mile or more arena. And I said to myself, quietly to myself, as I often talk to myself, that the Arizona Attorney General's office just deleted or just said to 32% of the cars in my fleet that you are inherently undependable and unsafe. And I disagree with that thought process. So right. in your particular case, those are your options. If you stay with the cheap Walmart oil, which is fine, then change it maybe 6 times a year every 5,000 miles. And I think you'll save money and you'll still be protected. Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Mary. Bill, how can I help you today?
Thanks for taking my call. I got O2 Chevy Cavalier. once in a while when I turn the ignition, the dash lights come on, but it won't
2 minutes.
Start.
Okay. Does it crank over, but doesn't catch, or does it not crank over?
Not crank over.
Okay.
So after I turn the switch, turn the key a few times, then it starts up again.
Okay. If you will go to my website, marksalem.com, and print out FAQ 28.
Well, I don't have a computer.
All right. I can tell you that if a technician would watch your headlights, he could tell you whether it's the starter, the solenoid, a bad battery, a bad starter, or a bad connection. We can literally look at the headlights. You turn the headlights on, then you hit your key, and what the headlights do will tell you what's wrong with your car. We're using the headlights as a voltmeter. Where do you live?
South Phoenix.
South Phoenix, east of Central, west of Central?
East of Central.
Okay. I'm probably a close shop to you. I'm at Warner and I-10, so South Phoenix's baseline road area. And so I'm 4 miles south of I-10, 4 miles south of baseline on I-10. You could leave your car with us, and we would start it and diagnose the problem. You're going to spend Andy for a diagnostic for a no-start condition?
No crank, no start, probably somewhere between $40 and $50.
Yep. And we would tell you exactly what it is and guarantee that we would tell you exactly what it is, but you'd have to drop your car off and leave it there. But I'm close to you, and I would be happy to provide that service to you if you decided. The name of my shop is Salem Boys Auto. I don't have any other shops that I can recommend around you. I'm the closest one to you. And I rarely recommend my own shop over everybody else, but unfortunately in the geographical area that you're in, you're the closest to me. Stay right there. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour, 11 o'clock. Janet, I'm sorry you didn't wait. We don't get very many ladies that call in, and I just noticed that you called in and then you dropped off. But if you want, you can call us back, and I'll take you real quick. But for right now, we're going to take Ken. Ken, good morning. How can I help you?
Good morning to you. I have an 2014 Ford Explorer. Recently, when the ignition is in the accessory position, the radio, everything will just shut down, and a bar graph comes across the display area indicating that the battery is being saved and it's in order to get the power back again, you got to start the engine back up.
Okay. It clearly, we know that a battery that's fully charged is around 12.9 to 13 volts. And we know that a 12.5 battery is at 50%. And we know a 12.1 battery is 10% charged. So the computer is seeing a problem. Now, when the car is running, the battery voltage goes from 12-something to 13.8 to 14.5. So it adds a volt to the electrical system. So there's a problem because the computer is saying the voltage probably dropped below 12.6, and it's saying to you, I'm getting really nervous. I want you to quit doing what you're doing, and I want you to start the car up and charge the battery. I'm thinking the appropriate thing for you to do would be have someone to appropriately and charge and test your battery. And there's a good chance, is the car close to 2 years old or older than 2 years old?
It's right at the 2 year point.
Okay. In Arizona, the overwhelming average is two and a half years for a battery. So I think in your particular case, it's probably your battery is now weak. Unless, of course, that you spend 5 minutes driving it and then your wife goes in to Target and you sit in the parking lot with the radio on for an hour, that's not good because you're not adding enough electricity to the battery. You're taking more than you're adding because you only drove 5 miles to get there and 5 miles home, but yet you sat in the parking lot for an hour and listened to the radio or talk radio or something like that.
And I understand. I interestingly, I took it down to the dealer and we're in Surprise, and the dealer's way downtown, and I asked him if told him the symptoms. For some reason, they got confused on it, and but I said, I think it needs a load test and an output test of the alternator. They did both, said there's nothing wrong with it. And then they went through the little spiel that you just went through. I don't do that very often. I suspect there's really a battery problem, but...
I tell you what you could do. You can buy a little digital volt ohmmeter that measures DC voltage from uh-huh. Harbor Freight for $10.
Yep.
And you could plug it into a cigarette lighter plug-in, and you could monitor your own voltage. And so you would know exactly when that bar graph comes on.
Okay.
And I need your battery to be 12.5 to 13 almost all the time. But when the motor's running, I want to add a volt to that. So from 12.5 to 13.5 or from 13 to 14. Does that make sense to you?
Yep.
I need the electrical really system to come in. So I want you to write this down. Cranking voltage has to be above 9.6. If it drops below 9.6, the starter ain't going to work and you're in big trouble. So 9.6 is the minimum it should hit. Your battery should be in the 11-volt range when you're cranking it over. You can read that off the cigarette lighter. When you're driving down the road or idling with a fast idle, 13.4 to 14.8. That's the kind of voltage I want at the cigarette lighter plug-in. That tells you the alternator's working right. So you just kind of keep an eye on that. And I'll bet at 12.5 that bar graph's coming on, and above 12.5 it doesn't. I'm just going to guess, but I'm thinking that's the number we're looking at.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're more than welcome, Ken. Mike, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. I got a 91 Ford Ranger. And it'll run fine for a while. Like, I can go to work, and it seems to run fine. I get off work, work off 43rd and Buckeye. By the time I get to the freeway, the thing is, it'll idle, but, I mean, I got to keep the RPMs above 3,000 or it barely runs.
Okay.
Once I get on the freeway, runs fine all the way home, all the way to Olive in the 101.
Okay.
Get off the freeway, and I just got to idle the rest of the way home.
So you can't throttle up anymore. It just all you get is engine idle. No matter what you do with the throttle.
Well, it'll make noise and back, pop a little bit, and really no throttle response at all. If I just leave my foot off the throttle, it'll idle fine.
Okay. The popping noise indicates a lean condition, and a backfiring indicates a lean condition, and the absence of you being able to go past idle indicates a lean condition, and a lean condition is the fuel filter's plugged up or the fuel pump's substandard.
Okay.
As far as the idle's concerned, that's a completely different story now, because if you've got a problem where I can rev the motor and go 50, 60, 70 miles an hour, but when I let go of the throttle, it won't idle and it dies, that's an EGR valve that's probably dirty. An EGR valve that's probably hanging open, an EGR valve that I would unplug and stick a pencil in the vacuum line, and if you drove it 3 or 4 days and everything was fine, and then we plugged it back in and everything went to hell in a handbasket, then we'd go, bingo, it's the EGR valve. So you have two separate problems here. You have I don't have enough fuel to go above idle, and then you got another problem that's, it won't idle, but it'll go above idle with the throttle. Isn't that right?
Right.
So I think you have two problems.
But the weird thing is, that once I get on the freeway, as long as I keep that RPM above 3,000 and then get on the freeway, I can run down the freeway all day long.
Okay. The above 3,000, you have a fuel pressure regulator in that old Ranger,
yep.
And that fuel pressure regulator could be bad, so you're actually saying to that gate, when I give it really deep throttle, shut the return gate and build pressure at the engine. Because the gate opens and closes. So if you're at idle, the gate opens, so you've got pressure coming in, but we're letting 80% of it go back to the tank. But when you're on the freeway and you're deep into the throttle, I'm going to close that gate because I want all that fuel that's coming forward, I want it to stay there. So you might have a fuel pressure regulator that's a problem.
That was kind of my question. How can I tell if it's pump or regulator?
You're going to have to put a fuel pressure gauge on it first.
Well, I've done that. And at idle, it's fine. And when I'm sitting in my carport, doing the throttle with my hand, it all seems fine.
No, fine doesn't make it. When we talk about fuel pressure, we talk about a specific range of fuel pressure, 40 to 42, 42 to 45. And we want that pressure, the specification, 100% of the time, no matter whether you're idling or whether you're wide open throttling, you're drag racing a Chevrolet. I want, and so fine doesn't cut it. You need to know exactly what the spec is for the fuel system in your car.
Well, it's around 32, actually, at an idle, and it is 32 at an idle.
Okay. And does it ever go above that?
Not really.
Okay. Does it ever go below that?
No, not when I'm sitting in my driveway. Okay, but like I say, I can't look at the fuel pressure gauge and drive it at the same time.
Well, okay, I got to go on a break, but yes, you can if you have the right fuel pressure gauge. We attach a fuel pressure gauge underneath the hood, and we run it through the crack of the hood, and we tape it to the front of the windshield, and we go drive the car. You're going to have to figure that out. So you're going to have to figure out you need the devices necessary to test the fuel pressure when you're driving down the road, or you can go rent one. So you might try and check with an auto parts store and see if they'll rent you a gauge with a 6-foot line that'll go to the Schrader valve underneath the hood, and then you can take it inside the passenger or the driver's side window, and you can hang on to the gauge and drive it. But we need that gauge not to drop about 32. If the 32 is a spec, you better not be losing 5 on the low side, but it could go 10 on the high side, and that's going to be okay. We'll be back right after this.
Hello.
Welcome back, everybody. 45 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem. Andy Salem is sitting here next to me. Andy has been working. She's my daughter. She's been working at the repair shop since 1994 when we built the facility. So she's been around cars a long time. She knows how to hot rod with the best of them. She has a pretty snazzy Camry that she drives with fancy tires and wheels. And one time I was driving her car, and something happened to the car, and I don't remember what, but a couple of tires and wheels got damaged.
Probably hot rodding around.
You think so?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I think if my memory serves me right, road rage. No, it wasn't road rage. I think I was making a U-turn, and I missed the U-turn, and it went up and down the curb.
Yeah,
and I remember calling
like
your
that.
Brother saying, do you remember where you got these brand new tires and wheels from Andy? And he goes, yep. And I said, well, order a right front and a right rear. And he goes, you're kidding. And I said, and don't tell her. And what did he do? Tell you. I mean, I even just barely got home, and you were out there using bad words. And I was just offended. I was offended. Folks, the thing I like the most about being on the radio and talking about car repair is when I send you to somebody and they do a good job and you call me back and tell me how happy you are. There was a lady who had been told by two different repair shops she had a bad motor in her truck. I sent her to Kurtz Auto at I-17 in Bell. Kurtz repaired the car for less than $200. She's been a customer of Kurtz ever since. She's been a big fan of mine ever since. But that's what makes me happy, is when I'm able to refer you to somebody who does a good job and is going to treat you fairly. It could have been that she needed a motor, but she needed a third opinion. And I'll tell you what, there's one lady out there that's doggone glad she got a third opinion. This oil pressure problem on the dashboard did not indicate a bad motor. It indicated a bad sending unit. So that repair was quite simple compared to the engine that she was being quoted $4,000, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000 for. Kurtz Automotive, I-17 in Bell, deserves to be on my shop and has made me look like a hero sometimes when I don't even deserve it. That's Kurtz, I-17 in Bell, the northeast corner. All righty. You got anything on your mind?
Mm.
Let me ask you a couple of other questions. What kind of gas does your car call for? Premium or regular?
Regular.
Okay. Can you tell the difference if you put premium in it? If you let it get down kind of low and then put $10, $20 worth of premium?
No.
Okay. Can you tell when you drive the Camaro that we have with a high-performance engine, can you tell whether it has regular or super in it?
I think on that one you can.
Okay. How about the Corvette with twin turbos?
Yeah.
Can you tell the difference
yeah.
there? How about Mom's old Yukon, the white one? Could you tell then?
I couldn't tell on that one, I don't believe.
Okay, and Suburbans, all the Suburbans we've had. You see, my point is that just about everything we own says you're supposed to take premium.
Premium, yeah.
And rarely do I put premium in anything.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell the difference, and I think you'll agree that I'm probably in the top 20% of the people that could tell if there was a difference.
Yeah.
The computer is going to compensate for, and you know what the difference between regular and premium is?
No.
Okay. Regular, let's think about a bunch of molecules in a circle. Mm-hmm. Okay. Regular, one molecule ignites 100, 100 ignite 1,000, 1,000 ignite 1,000,000. So the boom is very fast. It's like this. Boom. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
This is
that wasn't very fast.
I'm going to give you the other half now. Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Regular is this. Boom. This is premium. Boom. Okay, that's it. It's a longer burn in milliseconds. Okay,
gotcha.
So premium in an exaggerated way, one molecule ignites two, two ignites four, four ignites six, six ignites eight. You get it?
Mm-hmm.
The flame front, when you set fire to one half of the circle, okay, we're going to set fire to one half. The regular gasoline burns across the flame front real fast. But premium is but we're talking maybe 1 or 2 millionths of a second. Okay, so there isn't just a real big, and with computers having a window that's 12 inches wide, I want you to picture the window's 12 inches wide. When you're running premium, the timing can go to 8, but if you're running regular, the timing has to go to 7 or 6. Who cares?
Yeah, not a big difference.
It's not a big deal. So there's lots of cars out there, and their husbands will say, you have to run premium in your car, or wives will say, you have to run in my car. And this is what Mom and I used to do. She'd go fill up my truck, and I'd fill up her car, and we wouldn't tell one another what we put in, and when we would try to guess. And I would always guess premium because I'm figuring she always puts premium in it.
Mm-hmm.
But neither one of us could tell what we filled up the other cars with.
Yeah.
So there are some cars out there that really there is an obvious difference between regular. They represent maybe 1% of all the cars we work on.
Yeah.
1%. Do you have any success stories for for last week of anything that we looked like a hero on? I think we looked like a hero on that one car that the fuse panel thing was all about.
Yeah, that worked out really well.
And the shop foreman actually did that. Eddie's been with us 20-some-odd years, 26 years, something like that.
26, 27.
Yeah, I think since 85?
89.
89? Okay, so 90 is 25, 26 years.
Yeah.
27 years almost.
He just
kicked that one right in the old schnozzeroo, didn't he?
Yeah. He is just amazing.
He is.
He never ceases to amaze us.
And not only that, and we'll brag about Eddie for a minute. In his bays right now, he has a diesel truck apart.
The cab off of it. It is in two pieces.
The cab is sitting on sawhorses, and then the frame with the engine is over here.
Yes.
He has a 39 Ford truck with a big block Chevy with a blower on it. He's working on that, and he just rekeyed the passenger side door.
Yeah, he's got that SSR.
He's got the SSR in there. That's got a 6-liter high-performance motor. He's working on that one.
Yeah.
So the broad band of stuff that this young man has, and really and truly, if on a 1 to 10 scale, if a 10 is the top technician, he's a 12.
Oh yeah,
he's a 12. He's been a master tech ever since he's worked for me. And I tell this story: when I interviewed him, he was yawning, and that really frosted my tail end. So, have you ever rebuilt a quadrajet? Uh huh. I said. Can you diagnose a transmission leak? Yeah. That's the kind of interview we had. And everybody else, this is what everybody else says.
Yeah, I already know. Oh, yeah, I can do that in 20 minutes. I'll have that puppy out.
Quadrajets? I invented quadrajets. I know them. Hollies? Oh, I know them like the back. That's what everybody else.
Yeah.
I had never met someone like him.
Mm-hmm.
So I when I got done with the interview in 1989, I wasn't going to hire him. And your mom says, Renee, my wife, says, I think you should hire him. So I hired him, and he is so good.
Yeah, so good.
And then I recognized I was boring him to death. He had so much self-confidence. Mm-hmm. He had so much knowledge. He was just bored at the interview because I'm trying to pick and choose on what he can do, and he can do it all.
Yeah. And so humble.
And
David,
he
is your next caller.
Yes.
He is. He's our shop foreman, so you can't come in and ask Eddie to fix your car. But if you have a car that's really difficult, Eddie will be part of the repair process because he supervises those kinds of cars. But he is my right hand, my left hand, my right brain, my left brain. He's everything.
Mm-hmm.
Who is the caller for me?
David.
David, good morning to you. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you doing this morning?
Good, good. Thank you for asking.
I talked to you probably about a month ago. I bought an old 77 Pontiac Le Mans.
Okay.
And I guess when I bought it, the gentleman I bought it from told me it had been sitting a while. So it's got rats have been in it as far as some of the wiring down by the starter and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Now, did GM put these little, I guess they look like fusible links down by the starter area? I see a couple of them, and you know, some of the wiring is exposed, so I don't know if I need them, or I guess they're there for a purpose.
Yeah, no, you need them. You can go to any auto parts store and just ask them for 6 inches of fusible link, and they're going to ask you what color it is. So there, you'll be able to tell them it's purple or it's orange or it's yellow or it's red or whatever. Or give them the application. Tell them it's 77 Pontiac Le Mans. And you'll buy a couple of butt connectors and you'll just cut that area out. Use the two butt connectors and put the fusible link back in. That's all you have to do. Your out-of-pocket expense won't even be $10. It'll take you a little bit of time to do it and you'll disconnect the battery and have to take that harness off the starter to get to it. But other than that, you'll be fine. But you're going to have to replace the fuse link. You can't afford to have it open like that. That's a fire hazard, and if that hits any kind of ground, you'll die where you're at, and you'll need a tow truck.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay, thank you very much, Mark.
You're welcome, David. You're welcome.
Okay, bye.
And if you want to email me, I'm leaving town this afternoon. I'm taking my bride of 42 years, to... she's taking me to Florida, and there we're getting on a boat, and I don't really know where we're going, and I don't really care. But I'll be back in about 10 days. So if you send emails to mark@marksalem.com, then Andy will be disseminating those and answering those the best she can, but she'll also leave some for me. So I have something to do when I get back, because I'm going to be tanned, you know? I'm going to be suave, you know? I don't even know where we're going. All I know is I needed it to go down and get a TSA thingy so that I could get through there faster, I guess.
Yeah, less hassle so you don't have to get undressed and dressed at the airport.
Isn't that the truth? And the guy said to me, you had a little problem. I said, why is that? And he says, one of the hijackers on 9/11 had the last name of Salem. Mm-hmm. And I said, I know that. I said, I couldn't fly for 2 years because last name was Salem. And he says, no, he says, we cleared you. And
Two minutes.
Said, well, thank you. And then I took off my turban. And I'm teasing you. I'm teasing you, okay? I don't want to hear from anybody if I've offended because I don't care, all right? I'm just
He's not going to check his emails anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's okay. I'm just teasing, all right? I'm making fun of my own name, all right? So you don't have a standing to say, yeah, that was distasteful. Go back to California.
Oh, man, you're really.
You know what? I don't know. Sometimes I get in these kinds of honorary moods it is a different world over there, west of the Colorado River. It really is a different world. And you know, there's a bunch of cops, friends of mine, that have gone over there to work and come back, and they drove over, but they ran back.
Yeah.
They ran back. So they say it's just a little different over there. And Ronald Reagan came from there. And really, he was a good guy. So was John Wayne.
So there are some good in the bunch from over there.
Exactly. Anyway, my email address is mark@marksalem.com. You can go to marksalem.com and find all of our list of really good shops and the list that I hang my hat on. And I want to tell you about one more of them, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing in Mesa. He's on Main Street just east of Stapley, and he's been around in Mesa for 30 years or more. Brian and Thelma, the husband and wife that run Thompson's Auto Repair, great people. They'll treat you fairly. They always have. They always will. And they're centrally located, and he's the only shop in Mesa that has passed the muster to be on the list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix. Thompson's Auto Repair on Main Street, just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Until next week, wear your seatbelt, and if somebody does something nice, stick your arm out the window and say thank you. That's the nice thing to do. I'll do the same thing. God bless you. I'll see you next week.